So for all my sins, I'm a Korean accent member. Around 12, there must be some temporary coup.
I'll be praying for you at that time.
Please, I need one.
It's almost prayer time.
Yeah, pray for me, you know, so that I have a nice and can even bring the matter.
Just yes, sir. I know you'll make it.
Yeah. In terms of apologies, the yesterday's apologies were sent. Honorable Remesa is on his way. Today, I haven't heard anything.
Contact member.
They are coming or they are planning solidarity with Kosati.
Aren't we a study group? We look like we are a study group.
Yeah, well, because we are not going to take decisions. So we'll see how the day goes today. If we finish off on all the suggested areas of amendment, we'll see how we're made with tomorrow's voting. In terms of the continual otherwise. We have also asked the Parliamentary Law Advisor to do a legal opinion on issues of constitutionality that have emerged during the hearing. So we hope that that would come through next week. If it comes on Tuesday, the better. So that once we have had Saga and the Commission on Gender Equality and the legal opinion, then we can start to deal with the bill itself. And see if we can finish it off. Without any waste of time, do you? Over to you.
Doesn't check with yourself or your office. When we had a presentation last time, we requested about 2 to 3 of presenters to submit the proposed goals they didn't have. And they promised to come back to us. Doesn't check that we have received any of those that we requested them to present.
It's only the Gauteng Department of Economic Affairs and Planning, which we circulated yesterday.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yesterday we did go through our responses to all the issues that were raised by those who made submissions during the hearing. It is not our intention today to repeat the same things that were raised yesterday, but our focus today will be to look at what would our responses look like if we're going to factor them in any amendment, any proposed amendment to the bill. This is, we have just circulated the draft, which highlights the amendment. On the screen, you will see that we have put these proposed amendments in red, and we have underlined them. And where we have deleted, we have shown what we have deleted or what we have replaced. So that is what we have done. We have seen the need to introduce the preamble, which was there. So in this bill that we have circulated, you will see that on page 2, we do have that preamble. And the preamble is responding to many of the comments that said we need to contextualize this bill and say, what is it covering? Why is it necessary that we must have this bill? So we have, in those comments that are there in that preamble, covered many of these issues that justify the need for this for this bill. So we have responded to many of the issues that were raised by the presenters through this preamble. You must note that even though yesterday it appeared that there were too many amendments, it was a repetition, basically, like we had indicated earlier, that most of the presenters of the submission raised similar issues. So even though it looked like there were many amendments, actually they related to similar or same clauses. You will see that as we take you through the proposed amendment. We feel that this is what the committee could consider when you take the decision next week. I'm going to ask Sandy to take us through the details of those amendments. We'll start with the preamble.
Thank you, Chair. As the DG noted, the preamble it basically restates the nature of the problem, and it starts almost from the history of the assessment pattern, and then to then state that the competence constitutionally for the subject matter is split among the spheres of government. And the Constitution used the word provincial planning for what is within the exclusive provincial legislative competence and municipal planning for the municipal sphere. Nonetheless, the Constitution enjoins all of us, all the spheres to work together. We're then saying that because of this multiplicity, there are different laws at different levels on the subject of land use management and land use planning. But we also stated the effect of these disjointed and multiple laws. And we have recited certain provisions of the Constitution, specifically Section 24, Section 25(5), and Section 26 of the Constitution. With a view to saying that all these things are absolutely necessary for us to achieve our goal of integrated human settlement and effective land use management. Broadly, this is what was stated in the the need, the motivation for this bill being in Section 44 to bill. I'll go straight to plus one of the bill, Chair, if I may. The bill itself, plus one is on definition. That's page six of the unauthorized version of the bill. On the version we have circulated, it's a very small print. In order to deal with the definition of application, we are suggesting that reference to 39 should now be to 33. Because section 33 of the bill functionally defines what an application should be, and it goes to the heart of the definition itself, as opposed to the likely confusion that arose when we had referred to clause 39, which authorizes the land use regulator. We then went on to change the meaning. We had initially defined executive authority of a municipality to mean the executive committee or the mayor. Anyway, where there is no executive committee or executive mayor, the committee of councillors. We have defined it by reference to the council of the municipality as defined in the Municipal Structures Act, in which case we will then ensure that the political decision at the municipality is effectively in the hands of the council as opposed to the mayor. The next amendment, honorable members, is in relation to clause 3 of the bill on objects. Clause 3 on objects in the document we submitted today is on page 7. We have amended the objects a little bit to introduce the element of sustainability and efficiency in the use of land. Just for more clarity on that point. After clause 3, we then went on to clause 5, which is on page 8 of this bill. Clause 5 mandates the minister to do compulsory norms and standards. We had requested compliance as subject to the Constitution and the Act. It still remains, except that we are now saying that in accordance with this Act and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, which enjoins the minister to follow certain steps in its interacting with other threats of government, to then make sure that the provisions of the IGR Framework Act is complied with in the making of norms and standards by the minister. We introduced the question of compliance with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act further in clause 6 of the bill. Clause 6 is still on page 8, where we're saying that when the minister seeks to support or strengthen the capacity, especially of municipalities, to adopt and implement an effective system of land use management in accordance with this Act, we do believe that the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act must be adhered to. We went on to clause 7. Clause 7 is the counterpart of clause 6, except that clause 6 deals with national support, while clause 7 provides for provincial support to municipalities. In addition to clause 7 providing for provincial support, the key thing is that it creates the space for the provinces to make their own legislation, which is consistent with this Act. With this bill when it becomes an Act. It also allows the provinces to define what amounts to provincial interest. In the submissions made before this House, we were told that we should make sure we throw more clarity on the meaning of provincial interest. Whilst we have not defined provincialism, we have decided to remove, or we're suggesting that we remove special provincial concern, because in the later clauses we have then tied the question of provincial interest to the competence of the province as defined in terms of the constitution. We went further by also saying that when the premier takes steps to resolve disputes in connection with land use schemes amongst municipalities, it must be within the framework set by the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. We went on to clause 8 of the bill. Clause 8 talks to the establishment of the Municipal Land Use Committee. At least one of the submissions made to this committee touched on the fact that we were too prescriptive in terms of the council of the municipality appointing members of the Municipal Land Use Committee. The impression was that the council may be too busy in certain instances to deal with this matter. There may be the issue of staff members seeking greener pastures here and there. So to introduce that flexibility, we decided to say that the council must either appoint, or they can, the members of this committee may be appointed under the general direction of the council. Regarding clause 9, we've made a few amendments which are technical, which are consequential, and a few clarity ones. If we look at 9.1b, 9.1b in the original version is longer than what it is at the moment. It says that at least 3 must possess appropriate qualifications out of the 15. We feel that maybe we should be silent on this. We need not talk about, because it's already dealt with later in that same clause. Especially if we're looking at clause 8, which talks about the council being appointed under the general direction of the executive authority of the municipality. We think we should give the council more flexibility in prescribing what should happen in this case. But then we have introduced a new clause 2. The new clause 2 in this 9 seeks to say that the committee may co-opt technical advisors, as opposed to the previous formulation which suggested that there are voting and non-voting members. We have decided to be clearer in that, to say that technical advisors may assist the committee in the performance of their duties. And clause 3, the new sub 3 of 9, proposes that the technical advisor co-opted by the committee is not a member of the committee and has no voting rights. It's just in an attempt to throw more clarity into the bill. We are then saying that in the new subclause 4 of 9, that a person co-opted as a technical advisor may be paid, even if the person is not a public servant, for whatever service that person is rendering to the committee. We did not do anything regarding clause 10 of the bill. Clause 11 of the bill deals with disqualification from membership of the Municipal Land Use Committee. And the initial comment around that is what amounts to the last part of that statement that said other political office bearer. And the question was then, are we sure about the scope of political office bearer? We've looked at legislation on the remuneration of political office bearers. We saw some guidance, but we've been advised that we can propose to the committee that we just list those who should be excluded from being members of the Municipal Land Use Committee. And that's the suggestion we're making to this honorable committee in terms of clause 11A, to remove the ambiguity that was in the original version. The next suggested amendment is on clause 13. Clause 13 of this bill deals with jurisdiction of the Municipal Land Use Committee territorially. Clause 36 of the bill talks more about jurisdiction, about the power of land use regulators, the kind of applications they may deal with. Clause 13 deals with the territorial area covered by the Municipal Land Use Committee. We our proposal is that we consider removing clause 13 and making it a sub-clause under 36. There are other provisions in the bill, like clause 25 of the bill and clause 65, which also talks to the jurisdiction of tribunals and jurisdiction of the National Land Use Commission. We are proposing that this be made subsections or sub-clauses under the present clause 36. It has nothing to do with the content of it. It's just the arrangement of the bill. We can also bring it back, but it's nothing about the content of the bill, as I said. There is an amendment around clause 14. Clause 14 talks to the term of office, which in the original formulation said two things. That the term of office is 3 years, and we are saying that a member of a committee may not be appointed for more than two consecutive terms. We've decided to propose that we will remove the question of reference to the number of years that members of the committee may serve. And instead of that, we were suggesting that the municipality itself determines the length of service that an official. May serve on the land use committee. We then decided to remove the reference to consecutive terms. We wanted to be under their direction. So if they lose staff every month, they may then replace every month. If they do have loyal staff, they may then decide to keep them longer. But we leave it to the determination of the municipality. We're not making any suggestion in terms of clause 15. On clause 16, we believe that clause 16.1 will read better if we remove the word hand after paragraph B, and if we change it to her. Clause 16.2, we've just inserted something in it. We haven't deleted anything. We are saying that a member of a municipal land use committee who is not a municipal employee, or we do not think it is feasible for an official to resign by giving 3 months' notice. Many do give 1 month or less. So we feel that members of the municipal land use committee should, for the sake of continuity in the board, should be requested to give 3 months' notice, and the municipality may decide to accept a shorter period if there is motivation for that. The next amendment, honorable members, is in respect of clause 23 of the bill, which is on page 12 of the version that we submitted this morning. This amendment is exactly the same as we proposed under clause 11. You may recall, honorable members, that the reference here was to the word other political office bearer. And in order to promote certainty, we've decided to define who exactly is removed from it, as opposed to making it so generic as to cover any other person that may not be intended. So it's just for more clarity on the bill. As I stated, clause 25, we're proposing it be removed and relocated to 36. It's the same argument that we advanced in respect of clause 13 of the bill, which applies to clause 25 as well as clause 65 of the bill. We're proposing that they be removed and placed as subsections under the present clause 36 of the bill. We've also stated that the 3 years for municipal land use committee members should be determined by the council. We're proposing the same thing regarding members of the provincial land use tribunal, to say that the premier should determine their term of office. we then moved on to, on page 40, there's also a very small amendment, but we'll do the numbering and lining later. But we identified the functions of land use regulators on page 14, at the beginning of part 3 of chapter 3 of the bill. We just insert and procedures in there, because that is what really it is. But on clause 32 of the bill, we were suggesting that 32.3 would remove the word only. Regarding clause 33, it's also a bit of technical amendment. What we have in the original version of the bill, okay, because at 33.1a, we are proposing that we use the word or, so that the submission by City of Johannesburg as to whether you can do a combo application or you can join the parts of A, B, C, D is very clear. But the second thing, if we look at 33.1b, honorable members, is that the original version suggests that the word upon application in the, that the last, the one I would try to cross out of 33.1b. The reality is that phrase applies to the two sub items. So technically it should come below it and not just beside it. Because if you see the original formulation, it would appear as if that word qualifies only B. But indeed it qualifies the two sub items. So it should sit below it and not next to 33.1b. And that's why we've removed it there to put it where it properly belongs. Clause 34, we remain indebted and grateful to Honorable Tlali for pointing to us that we repeated 33 and 45 of the bill. So we're proposing that we have to remove one. So probably if I want to get one free, that happens then. but we don't have that luxury, so we decided to remove. So we're removing 34 to clean up the bill. In respect of clause 35 of the bill, we are cleaning up further. 35.1, we just removing certain words because they do not have any value per se. They do not remove or add to that. On the to what 35.16 to say. Since we're not paid by the number of words we're using, we decided to stick to something more clean. Chair, regarding 35.2, 35.3, and 35.4, we stated here yesterday that there were concerns that the City of Cape Town had raised the possibility of the extra burden in terms of extending the provisions of Section 25 of the Constitution. And we do agree that there may not be need to create a compensation framework where there is removal of restrictive conditions. And if somebody truly feels that it has effect substantially on that person's property rights, the private law remedies are still open to that person to seek action in the appropriate court. But since we do not want to throw more confusion into this bill, we have accepted the suggestion. We are therefore proposing that we remove subclauses 2, 3, and 4 of 35. And consequentially, we'll be renumbering subclauses 5 and 6 of 35 to the 2 and 3 accordingly. Regarding clause 36, clause 36 deals with jurisdiction of land use regulators. And as we've defined land use regulators will then be the municipal land use committee, the tribunal, and the National Land Use Commission advising the minister in that case. So what we have done here is to clean up the substantive amendment here is largely to clean up clause 13 of the bill, clause 25 of the bill, and 65 of the bill, and make them 2, 3, and 4 in terms of this bill. But probably before we look at even 2, 3, and 4, the nuance of 2, 3, and 4, We are also saying that the minister may regulate the jurisdiction because there was a suggestion that What about if an application goes beyond the boundary of a province, and that we will feel that there may be one or two special applications which may need extra regulation, and rather than being overly prescriptive, we have just created a scope for further determination, especially to regulate unusual applications that are not covered by A, B, C, D of 36.1 as it is at the moment. So we're just proposing that the insertion of that paragraph in 36.1, the new 36.1. And then, as I said, what you have in 36.2 at the moment, the proposed 36.2 is actually your original clause 13 of the bill. And what we have in clause 36.3 is what was in clause 25 of the bill. And what we now have in 36.4 is what was originally, or what is in the original clause 65 of the bill. Regarding clause 37, the Community Law Center, the Community Law Center of the University of Western Cape advised us that we must tread very carefully regarding the possibility of provincial intrusion into the mandate of municipalities. The principal said that if we refer to a provincial growth and development strategy, we may unwittingly be creating a shell without the what is in it, and it may be a potential source of friction in that interaction between the provincial and municipal sphere of government. In order to make sure we throw more clarity in this respect, honorable members, we are proposing that clause 37B, no, clause 37A, first deals with the question of the competence of the province. To say a provincial interest, and that is functionally the definition of a provincial interest, that a provincial interest will relate to an application which impacts on the provincial planning and matters within the functional competence of the provincial sphere in terms of the constitution. So we are tying it straight to what the constitution allows a province to do. Regarding national competence, we were also removing reference to national special development perspectives, and certainly glad to propose that we remove the word or similar instrument. By proposing that we consider the use of the word matters within the functional competence of the national sphere in terms of the constitution. And we think that will throw more clarity, and it will assist in dealing with the possible constitutional intrusion of the provinces in the affairs of the municipal sphere. We then went on to 44, which is the criteria that must be applied by land use regulator when considering a land use application. We had suggestions from AgriSA, from a number of parties that we should remember agriculture, and especially that where the legislation governing agriculture is still on its way. So we're proposing that in considering and deciding an application, a land use regulator must make a decision which is consistent with the compulsory norms and standards, with measures designed to protect and promote the sustainable use of agricultural land. And in this way, we believe that it will cater for the concern around the use of agricultural land.
Can I ask a question, Chairperson?
Yes.
On that one. I remember that it was mentioned by AgriSA. It only talks about agricultural land, which relates to commercial farming. I don't know whether it won't be a little bit dicey. They are talking only for their members. What about agrarian reform? when we look at the two economies, can we, I'm just trying to think, I don't know whether it suffices.
In the object, we have tried to define this thing very broadly. It will include all agricultural land. Even though it was raised by AgriSA, when we talk about agricultural land, we are referring to all agricultural land. It doesn't matter who is the owner, as long as it is known to be agricultural land. And we have dealt with that in the objectives already.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear.
Thanks, ma'am. So we're proposing that a decision must be taken after full cognizance of measures designed to protect agricultural land. We also heard from in the course of the submission that we have not expressly mentioned the question of availability of engineering services, and if a land use decision is taken outside of that, may be problematic. That argument goes to provision of water, for instance, toilet facilities and the like. And we don't want developments that take place divorced from those. So we're specifically now mentioning, proposing that in clause 44.1, that sub item 5 under C, 44.1C. Item 5, the new one, that the state and impact of engineering services, social infrastructure, and open space requirements be a factor when a decision is taken, in addition to any other factors that may be prescribed, including time frames for making decisions. All members, that's what we have in terms of 44. 46 here is a totally new one. It's totally new. It talks to notification to the Surveyor General and the Registrar of Deeds. It's almost an omission which was pointed to us, and which we added in, we lost it in the course of on our way to parliament.
No, we
the state advisor can confirm that we looked at earlier versions and then we brought it back. We added it. But what is covered here, Chair, is that there are some decisions of the land use regulator which may have the impact of affecting a diagram in the Surveyor General's office. It may also have the impact of something registered in the Registrar of Deeds. And we're saying that when such decision has been taken by a land use regulator, the Surveyor General must know, and the Registrar of Deeds must endorse their records accordingly, so that you don't have a decision which has changed the land use scheme or which has changed the condition, like a removal of restrictions, for instance. It's normally a condition of the title deed which is registered with the deed office. So we're saying that where there is a decision that has impact on the diagram in the SG's office or in the title deed filed with the Registrar of Deeds, such must be notified accordingly. And when they are notified, they must endorse their records to reflect that reality. And that's what we're bringing in. Chair, in respect of clause 47, this chapter 4 deals with land use scheme, which is at the heart of this bill. Clause 47 of the bill empowers the executive authority of the municipality to develop, prepare, adopt, and amend land use scheme for all the land within a municipal area. We are proposing that a new subclause 2 be introduced to give due recognition to our traditional leaders within the framework of the Municipal Structures Act to participate in the development, preparation, adoption, and amendment of a land use scheme by a municipality. Well, that's our proposal, Chair. We are cleaning up clause 48 of the bill, Chair. There was a concern which is quite valid that the way the original formulation is couched, we may unknowingly be creating a scenario where we we're making it look as if district municipalities should do land use schemes. And we, as you have said, because land use scheme exists at the primary level, the right person is the right municipality is the local municipality as well as the metro. We're just introducing clarity by then saying that the metropolitan or local municipality must do this. We then introduced a new subclause 3 under 48 to also say that where you have a land use scheme and there is a sub scheme, or there is the possibility of a sub scheme, must expressly recognize that if a particular area which is subject of a traditional council is within a municipality, that traditional council may suggest, make input, and present a sub scheme for their area for adoption by the municipality as part of the municipal land use scheme. And that's the second suggestion to deal with the participation of our traditional leaders in the determination of the key function of land use schemes in terms of the bill. Honorable members, clause 49 is more about the determination of municipal boundaries, which is the exercise of the municipal demarcation board. We're only saying that this should be done with regard to land use scheme, and then we have made reference to the municipal land use committee. We have made reference to the metropolitan or local municipality in this regard. Same thing goes for clause 50 of the bill, which is just throwing clarity. Clause 51 is to ensure that we're talking about the local municipality within the area of a district municipality. So we've just tied that more clearly. Clause 51.2 further deals with the comments and the advice given by the Community Law Center about what exactly are we saying the provinces should do in relation to municipalities' determination of their land use scheme. What in the original formulation we had said that the land use scheme must give effect to national special development perspective, the provincial growth and development strategy, and the provincial special development framework or similar instruments. We were saying that we want to make it clearer by then proposing that land use scheme must be consistent, must give effect to policies made within the functional competence of the national sphere and provincial policies made within the functional competence of the provincial sphere in terms of the constitution. So that's the suggestion we're making in terms of alignment, so that there is no land use scheme at a municipal level which is not horizontally aligned to policies at the other spheres. It just talks more to the question of alignment that is so central to this bill. We move our chair from that premise to the question of the time when the decision of the land use regulator must take effect. As we have said, there are many times where a land use regulator takes a decision which effectively amends the land use scheme. In one hand, we are saying that if it affects what diagram is there in the SG's office, the SG must be notified. If it affects the condition of title, the register of this must be notified. But in this clause 56, what we are saying is that when does this change take effect? Initially, we have said that it should take effect the day after the decision has been taken. But we are then saying now that if that decision affect something registered in the Surveyor General's office or the register of deeds, it should only take effect after the notification has been given to the SG and the register of deeds. It follows on the initial amendments we've made to the 44. Yeah, the new notification, the new 46. Chair, we made other amendments regarding, I've already alluded to the question of when this should take effect. On the operational procedures, we had a comment, I think especially from City of Johannesburg, saying that where you have uncontested applications, where there is no objection to an application for a land use, why shouldn't they be able to delegate that to an official in the municipality? So the amendments we're proposing to clause 61 is to deal with the possibility that the municipality may want to delegate a land use decision making or a land use regulator for whatever to an employee of a municipality in the case of an uncontested application where there is no objection. But I'm sure we'll refine that question. We then remove the question of the power to decide the application, which was initially excluded, because we believe if we need to actually feed, it will be necessary to actually create a scope for delegation, so long as that delegation is done within the confines of sub 2 of clause 61, which imposes limitation on the delegation made to an official, a member of the tribunal, or a committee, or a subcommittee of the provincial land use tribunal. We are taking the question of technical advisors broadly for a land use regulator here, or especially in relation to committee, and I think we will still link it to the earlier one. Chair, chapter 6 and 7 of the bill talks to the role of national affairs in this bill. We had stated that certain land use decisions should be taken by officials, and that politicians should give general directions to officials on the parameters within which those decisions are taken. Actually, it was noted that why did we extend that same principle to the national sphere? We have abridged the original position here to say the minister remains the national land use regulator in the first of those areas within the competence of the national government. But we are now saying that as opposed to the initial draft, that the minister must do whatever it has to do only on the advice and recommendation of the National Land Use Commission. And that's what we're proposing in terms of clause 64 of the bill, Chair. So that the minister does not act without the National Land Use Commission. So effectively, the National Land Use Commission is the national land use regulator, except that the decision must still be sanctioned by the minister. Chair, we have stated already that we're proposing that clause 65 of the bill be removed and made a subsection under clause 36. We will cleaned up 13, 25, and 65 and made them subsection of 36 as they are at the moment. We hope to propose also to the committee that we then collapse at chapter 6 and 7 because they will essentially be talking about national concern here or national intervention in land use system. On the establishment of the National Land Use Commission, we just want to throw more clarity that we are not creating an agency here. Now that we're creating a board where you have people flying and creating their own system or such three entities. So we're just saying that the Director General of the Department of Land Affairs is the accounting officer responsible for the commission. So that while at provincial level, the Premier nominates a department to provide support to a tribunal, at the national level, the department provides that support and accommodation to the commission, and the DG remains responsible to the parliament for whatever money is expended by this commission.
So in other words, they are accountable to the DG.
The DG, they are accountable to the parliament via the minister, but in respect of financial matters, the DG must take care of their accounting, their books. As it seems at the moment, the minister remains responsible to Parliament, but the DG is the accounting officer. He watches the sense and the line to make sure that they are in order. In terms of the PFMA, that's the but the political accountability remains with the minister, to Parliament.
The money that they use is from the budget of the department.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't be accounted for Parliament if the accounting office is somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's So they have to account for each activity.
Mm.
Yeah. Because he's the accountant also, he's the accountant to us. No, not them. He's saying they're accountant to the column.
But in terms of the CSM case, it's the accounting officer.
Who isn't supposed to account?
So they're just emphasizing that point.
In other words, Chairperson, you are saying if the commission has misused the money, the DG will account to us what happened to that money.
Yes, yes. It is money that will be appropriated within the vote managed by the DG.
Mm.
So he remains responsible for how it is spent or misspent. So that's why we're just making it very clear that in terms of the functions of the commission as written in clause 67 of the bill, the initial draft said to the extent and in the manner the minister may determine and may prescribe. That formulation suggests like the commission is basically an errand committee of the minister, and that's not our intention to create a commission which goes at the beck and call of the minister. But it will remain, we're now saying clearly that the commission must assist, advise and make recommendations to the minister as a national largest regulator. And that it will advise the minister on all matters relevant or related to this act and its implementation. It may be instructed by the minister, it may be in the course of its normal activities, but it's not necessary to put the word as instructed by the minister. Their functions can be performed based on their legislative mandate. We're then in clause 68 of the bill. In the original formulation, I don't remember, in clause 68.1b, we had suggested that the commission should be a panel of experts in land use management, or other sector of the economy or government, as the minister may determine from time to time. We believe this is a bit restrictive on one side, that it says they must all be experts, because they are good grounds to have community participation. And they said you have experts in community affairs. We believe that we shouldn't limit it to sophisticated or certain experts. But we're saying that the qualification to be a member of a provincial tribunal should be sufficient to be a member of a National Land Use Commission, which is a bit broad. And Where to achieve consistency in that regard, we've tied the qualification for membership of this National Land Use Commission to be on the same ground as somebody who is qualified to be appointed as a member of a provincial land use tribunal. That's our suggestion, honorable members. That is as far as our clause 68 goes. We're also proposing that we remove.
Can you explain the qualification again?
Yeah. The original formulation states that a panel of such number of experts in land use management, any other sector of the economy or government, it presupposes that you must be an expert. And we're saying that that word may be high-sounding, but it's really not necessary. In matters of land use, we believe that whilst we need experts in land use, we also need experts who understand what's on the ground. So it should not necessarily be in land use or land use management. Maybe somebody who knows what goes on and what is desirable for the people, and you don't need to be an expert in that regard. So we're just proposing a bit of more flexibility and saying that we will tie it to the same qualification as what it takes to be a member of a provincial tribunal. And the qualification for members of tribunal is... 10.
Yeah.
I think the provincial cabinet is actually in 22. Yeah. 22 is the qualification. Yeah.
22 on the.
22 on the new one, page 12. So we're saying those qualifications should cover what is who qualifies to be a member,
yeah.
Not necessarily the expert. So we are deleting the that they must be expert in language.
Yeah.
Why don't you just write in those qualifications to cross reference in the tribunal? It sounds like twirling.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like.
Okay, we'll consider that.
Okay. Regarding clause 69, the clause 69 also as originally formulated it, it's probably one of those things that said we are giving the ministers too much power. When they said, because it's written like the commission must operate as instructed by the minister or as may be prescribed, we feel that it is not necessary. So we are proposing that that clause 69 be removed from the bill. Other members, we have not said anything on offences, neither have we done anything on regulations. Regarding the powers of the minister, there are two substantive amendments. The original formulation of the bill, in clause 73.2, the original formulation, suggested that the minister should intervene where there is failure of performance. We thought that if every effort has been made to capacitate and all these things, there should be a scope for intervention. But we are warned that this may be unconstitutional. In order to tread softly, we've decided to suggest to this committee to remove the original clauses, subclauses 2 and 3 of the bill, which you will find that where a municipality cannot or does not fulfill an obligation. So we are removing that and reference to the Minister of Housing. In its place, we are proposing that this section should be termed Minister Powers of the Minister and Premier. And the reason for suggesting a role for the Premier here has nothing to do with what we are removing. It has more to do with the original reason for 73.1. Chair, as you may recall, there have been quite a number of suggestions also that the provisions of the DFA, as well as the Less Formal Township Establishment Act, create a regulatory space for formalization or regularization of informal settlements. They also create scope for expedited transactions or procedures in case where there is no formal declaration. So what we're saying is that where you have a slum clearance activity or upgrading activity that needs to take place, or a number of things they're doing in the Department of Housing to upgrade settlements, it's basically the process in reality is situation where the laws as they are, they are too strict. That's why those areas are not formal. But the way and manner in which they are done is to relax or to exempt the application of certain laws to enable the creation of a land development activity around that place. So to this extent, we are suggested in 73.1 that the minister may exempt in public interest. We are not going further because we believe that we could develop regulations around circumstances in which people may make people or municipalities may make application for that exemption with a view to doing those kind of informal settlement upgrading. What we are proposing in the new 73.2 is basically an adaptation of what you have in your DFA and the Less Formal Township Establishment. And instead of retaining that in the minister, and we may be advised by the committee on where this power should appropriately lie, but instead of retaining it in the minister, we still retain part of 73.1 in the minister, without further restriction. But we're equally investing in the Premier, the almost similar powers, but with better guidelines, to say that when subject to Section 3 and in public interest, the Premier may also exempt a piece of land or an area for the purpose of land development for settlement of persons or community on an urgent basis or to regularize the settlement, and not in accordance with the laws relating to establishment of townships or any other law relating to land development. So basically, these new provisions will enable expedited land development processes, almost like you have in the DSA and the land format township establishment. And we've created the criteria for it in 3 to say that when considering such application in terms of sub 2, they must be guided by Section 44, which then ties them to directive principles, the question of equity, and all these principles that should be that should take place. We're also suggesting that a municipality must look at a land development plan for that area. People must just not use it as a shortcut. And the reason why the municipality is very critical here is not to fall into the same trap that we almost fell with the DFA, where cabinet were taking decisions without looking at what the municipality either has the money to do or is within the plan of the municipality. So we're saying that in considering an application for exemption, the Premier must be guided by or must consider a land development plan prepared or approved by the municipality for such piece of land. And that will talk to engineering facilities, social infrastructure on that land, whether it's fit for human occupation. The municipality will of course know the geotechnical condition of that land and what it is suitable for. And that's why we believe that we can regulate further what should be in the land development plan. But we're suggesting that these are the factors that the Premier must take cognizance of, and that we can also prescribe further criteria. And we're also suggesting that there should be an inquiry conducted before you fully develop this land on the health and safety of all of the affected persons, because you do not want to grant permission that the land should be used for a particular purpose when it's actually injurious to people's health. Yes, the criteria may be further prescribed, but we're suggesting that there should be an inquiry. And in approving this kind of application for exemption from the provisions of the legislation or for expedited activities, land development activities, we're saying that as in the DFA and in the less formal township establishment, we are proposing that the Parliament allows the realization of the strict operation of other laws relating to building standards, town planning and township establishment, environmental conservation, roads and water, which may have dilatory effects on the establishment of a township in terms of this section. We are also allowing removal of restrictions under this in this arena. We are then saying that conditions may be imposed. And the conditions that may be imposed in this instance will be basically to expect that the level of social infrastructure or development, like the question of surveying, because usually this kind of land you'll see that the outer boundaries are surveyed. So we believe that there should be scope for the imposition of conditions in this respect. And that where the land is not owned by the state.
That's explained for again.
Four is to say that when an application is submitted to a Premier,
in a layman's language.
Yes, I shall try as a layman. Yeah.
Not a laywoman.
You know that you have got to respond.
I'll be guided. What we're saying is that if you look at a normal piece of land,
mm-hmm.
when I say normal, in your developed formal areas, before you can open a development on a land, you say you want to build flats or offices, the land will have been surveyed. The land will have been surveyed. All the processes will have been, the social infrastructure, the township will have, the municipality will have approved it in that way. So we can then subdivide and sell. But what we are envisaging here will be land that has been developed against the town planning laws. It may be land that people, and this is a bit scary. It may be land that people, it may be land occupied as a result of land invasion. That people have decided to occupy somebody's farm. It happened in Benonia, isn't it?
The Mother Cliff one
is a classic case where it may be necessary for the state to actually acquire that land to consider settling that place. So we're saying in this instance that if we look at clause two of this proposed provision, we're saying it must be for the purpose of land development for settlement of persons or community on an urgent basis, or to regularize a settlement which has been established not in accordance with the laws relating to the establishment of townships. And these are your informal settlements, so-called. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're then saying that when the premier has this kind of application, the possibility should be there to say, I mean, if you may have buildings which do not satisfy your building regulations, there should be a scope for relaxation. Your normal town planning laws will say you must have how many meters between this fence and that fence. We're saying that there should be scope for relaxation of those kind of laws. Environmental conservation imposes a number of requirements. There may be motivation to relax those things. So we're saying that if these laws have dilatory effect on their stuff, if they are likely to be too cumbersome in this objective, the premier should have the authority to relax them. We do have that in Section 33 of the DFA as it is. We also have it in the Less Formal Township Establishment Act. We're also saying that the premier, in considering this application, should be able to remove a servitude, should be able to suspend a servitude, or amend the servitude. Same thing goes for a restrictive condition. And this may be registered on that land. For the purposes of the urgent settlement of people or formalization of an informal settlement. And I think that the premier may also impose conditions. And these conditions may be about a plan to progressively ensure that that land is developed to the stage where it should be. But the last one here, the one on 4D, then says that if the land is not owned by the state, because if it is owned by the state, it's easier to have a plan to whether you want to rent it to people, you want to consider a form of transfer to people, but the premier must also be able to consider and approve an acquisition plan for expropriation, and I will probably need to tie that provision clearly. The key provision here is to say that if people are on a piece of land, and in many instances you'll find that where your settlements, which are not formal, are located, may be state land, they may be private land, and like the Mother Cliff one, it's one case where the state ought to have offered to buy the land, because it was actually cheaper but I would imagine that the constitutional damages are awarded against the state. It should have been possible for the state to acquire the land from the private person and rather find a way to settle the people on that land in Mother Cliff. But this is what we are proposing, and we can refine that provision. But basically, this covers your concern around whether or not we have created a scope for expedited settlement in relation to land use. We are saying that we can consider a plan or agreement relating to the award of compensation table where somebody has suffered a damage as a result. Because sometimes the application in terms of this section may be brought by a municipality. It may also be brought by an NGO or by a group of people. It's not necessarily a state activity here, and we have not requested that it should be so. But we're saying that if it's a private initiative, these are just the conditions that must be complied with. In terms of the proposed clause 5, we are saying that kept even use this word township.
No, continue. I understood very well.
Thanks. Yeah. That, if then this land is of, it has been developed to that standard, or this there has been a relaxation, the municipality, in order to establish a township, that means to, so that people can have full title to this land. It's also a preparatory step towards formal titling, to say that it can get a general plan. Because as you said, you probably have an outer boundary surveyed, not the inner boundaries of survey. And you need a survey plan to register with the SG, approved by the SG before you can even partition or subdivide in a way. So we're then saying that if the plan is to ultimately think about vesting, the municipality may do the following. Of course, the general plan to be prepared. Yes, it's approved by the Surveyor General. And that may be filed with the Registrar of Deeds. We've not gone beyond that because this is really talking about land use as opposed to tenure reform. And, I'm sure the DJ will visit tenure reform at some point.
Is it not the easy way to check from the deed that who owns before you do
one believes that a land development plan or whatever name we call it, a plan that will be submitted in applying to the Premier for this exemption will talk about ownership. It certainly will talk about ownership. It's necessarily. So we'll,
I think the issue there is that you would have to do that before to make sure that the ownership is clear on the land. But this section is talking about when you want to formalize this plan now, once you've done it, you need to get the deed office so that it can register the new plan now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last one, and it's really just a tinkering subject to the filling of the house or the special advisor. Thanks. The last suggestion relates to, it's also an attempt to seek to introduce a new clause which is not in the bill at all. We've been told that we did not deal with the laws to be repealed, and we did not give indication of what will happen. Somebody asked a question, what will happen to Ordinance 15 of 1985? And some people said we are adding this law on top of existing laws. And people are saying that we added to the confusion as opposed to solving it. So we've decided to propose that a section to deal with the relationship between these laws and other laws be considered, subject to the filling of the House and the State Advisor's comments on that. But we're saying that the key problem is multiple institutions, multiple... The first price is that if there is any other law in addition to the Land Use Management Act, if it becomes an act, or when it becomes an act, we do not want parallel institutions. We do not want institutions created outside of this legislation. So we want to functionally then say that no legislation, including the national legislation not repealed by this act, may prescribe an alternative or parallel mechanism or measure or institutional system on land use management and land development in a manner inconsistent with this act. So the indicative word here is that any other law can exist elsewhere, but it must not be existing in parallel to what this act says on land use management. And we hope that we will refine the words we've used there. And the second provision is to deal with provincial laws which are still there, pending the time they repeal it, or if they choose not to repeal it, or when they do repeal it and introduce any law. But all we're saying is that the provincial legislation or other legislation, including an old other legislation, and the constitution defines what an old other legislation is, applicable in the homeland. Most of them have the status of provincial legislation, as defined by item 1 of Schedule 6 of the constitution, having the effect of regulating land use and land use management, which is
in effect at the date of the commencement of this act continue to offend subject to 147(2) of the Constitution, which basically says that since this is a 44(2) legislation, this legislation will prevail over those laws. And, Chair, that would be what we are proposing from this side.
I don't have anything to add. We have covered, we have tried to cover almost all of the aspects that we had raised in the discussion yesterday. So this is our proposal.
Okay, thanks. On definition, the executive authority. In relation to a municipality means the council of the municipality as defined in the municipal structure. We've got different types of municipalities where the executive authority lies with the executive mayor. We read that in terms of the infrastructure act, even in those instances where you've got an executive mayor, but the executive authority might be in the campus. That's one definition. Page 8 on non-substantive. So the minister must, in accordance with the Minister of Information Framework, determine and describe compulsory norms and standards for land use management. I take it that that's a matter of consultation with the other spheres of government. Do we take it that in the context of consultation, the public is not part of the equation in determining the laws as well? On page 9, clause 9(2). You say there that a committee may, in the performance of its duty, co-opt technical advisors to assist the committee. Is it well written? Can we put it? I am not sure on page 10, the term of office of committee members.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine in terms of the length. Though this is a framework legislation, we don't want to over-prescribe. The issue of term, I think that provision is pretty good. But you can explain yourself better on that point. There was an issue on clause 15 that was raised. Committee Law Center, Western Cape, with regard to the Single Public Service Bill that is now in Parliament, which deals with the conduct of public service in the context of the Single Public Service. Therefore, the employees of municipalities will be subjected to So that's the specific code of conduct. We talked about this yesterday, but I thought that we'll do a thing about it. Okay. I think I'll come back on another issue first before four. Remember?
There's a question. The question of clarity. Are they going to send this amendment back to the vendors that are coming before us on Tuesday? My view will be critical for them before they come to us on Tuesday. They see the particular measure. That's one. And two, I think at this stage there are quite few amendments here. I thought I'd rather reserve my comment for today, but I'm not starting. I have to study thoroughly. There's no way I can comment extensively today on the issue. I have to cross reference to the original and this one. Just hide one or two issues before I study this, and I'll make my thorough comment after Tuesday's presentation. I can just highlight one or two issues only before I reserve my item. I think they have raised the question of terms of office. This one is completely inconsistent with other legislation. Completely inconsistent. I'll leave it. The number of committees and structure that we have formed, for example, DPLG and DPS and others, this one is completely inconsistent. I think you need to look at that. And the other one that I just saw it, which of course is a serious problem also, it's on page 25, under clause 73. There's totally new arrangement there. These are some serious problems, as far as I can see, just for glancing. They took some of the sections in the appropriation bill and took some of the sections in PIE, which has not been come before. I'll just leave there, but I'm saying I'll reserve my comments for today until next week. Thank you.
I thought those provisions were listed from the FA, master of the
expropriation. Some of the provisions were included in the process. In the past, that was before how it took them here.
And I thought that was going to conflict with PIE. Is it?
Okay.
If I may, I can't say this.
Yeah, it was the FA and the... Yeah, because I remember the
decision was just look at the FA. Yeah. And
that's for my time to be standing. Yeah.
That's one question. I just want clarity on page 9. When you say a committee may, in the performance of its duties, opt technical advisors to assist the committee. In most cases, it happens to the consultant, which consumes all the money of the department. Is it going to be on a consultation basis, or is it going to be an advisor that will come and advise and leave? If I may get a clarity on that one. And lastly, it's on page 19, where you talk about the redetermination of municipal boundaries. What happens if the scheme then overlaps? You have this scheme that was on the other side of the particular municipality that will then, after the redemarcation, overlap. what will happen there? Is there no need of making an agreement? Or I don't know. Just clarify me on that one. I think that's okay.
On clause 39, I'm not sure what there's a clause where we talk about the sustainable use of agricultural land. I'm looking at my own. Now, on clause 39, there was a proposal to say that when an application is made to change land use form or function, particularly in relation to agricultural land, the Department of Agriculture or the Minister of Agriculture has got to have a thing to say about it. That was not to be just specify those. You can just pick them from the conditions of appointment for the tribunal. So 78. There was a proposal to improve the conservation of agricultural in addition to your occupational land what was our issue? Teeth ready. Perhaps we can wait for teeth and when we come back respond to those. I'm likely not to be dead.
Can do with that.
Yeah. Some few consultations that we must do before we
What will we be doing tomorrow then?
Well, what are we doing today? When are we reconvening?
So what will we be doing tomorrow?
That's what we'll have to deal with after this meeting.
So are we excused for the rest of today? Or? So I'm trying to understand.
Are we reconvening after tea?
Yes.
Kasatu has released us for the rest of the day.
No, I said the 12 when I leave. There will be some mini crew here.
Oh, I see.
We are welcome. We are functionary.
Functioning.
We must
join other
parts. Yeah,
no.
Okay. Yeah, he goes there.
We are going for the memorandum. So who will be doing that?
I can go back to the office tomorrow. Monday until Thursday again. Coming next week.
Okay, let me call my office to change my.
No, it's not in question that that is not order. This is the policy. There are policy is an old system. So we need to digitize another bit more electronic system.
Oh, okay.
Now, this old system is low. So if they can change the technology subdivided land must be registered in the city office. Even where there are these sectional titles, all of those sectional titles, whether they are in this tall building,
there's nothing to do.
Or just these midland or townhouses, they must register each one of them. Now, the deed office,
where is the problem?
That's my own.
Yeah, you, when are you messed up, I think
that's the issue. You have to rethink and rework whatever, because the other SARs are very fine print. Which I thought maybe they're going to enlarge a little bit, but some of the veterans of this committee can see, because some of the veterans cannot see.
Thank you.
They cannot see the small print.
Yeah,
so it's very appreciated if they do that. Mamandula was just saying that this reconvening of this meeting now is just to hear the response from the department.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are adjourned until next week because there's no meeting tomorrow. And we meet on Tuesday, where we listen to the two presentations and any other further submissions that we would have received. Department?
Thanks, Chair. One of the comments, or the first comments down in my notes is we are proposing to alter the definition of executive authority of a municipality to municipal council. We will still have further engagements with the state to advise on this point. But just to say that the fair was maybe the original formulation suggested that the decision could be usurped by the mayor or without the actual full council, the councillors. When we look at the Structures Act, it actually spoke about the composition of the council of the municipality. But we can relook it to ensure that we haven't left anything out unwittingly in an attempt to cover the field. But we'll take note of that comment. There was a comment around clause 5 of the bill on norms and standards, and the question of reference now being made to the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, that may be sufficient in terms of dealing with the interrelationship between the spheres of government, but it may not extend to cover the question of public consultation. We take note of that, Chair. We believe that the norms and standards have been regulations in terms of that will of course be published for public comments before they are finalized. It's a rule that regulations are first published as drafts. Consultations are made with the public before they are finalized. And in the nature of norms and standards in this sector, the norms and standards may be varied. The norms and standards will have to deal with a multiplicity of issues at different levels. So you cannot have a single norm. Okay, there may be areas where you have minimum norms across the country, but you realize that you may not be able to, if you have norms on densities of human settlement, for instance, you may not have the same thing for Northern Cape where they have so much land, same thing as Gauteng, for instance. So there is, of course, the reality that the nature of development of norms and standards that we envisage in terms of this bill will certainly call for consultation and public participation in the process of the development of norms and standards. Yes. There was other comments on 9.2. And clause 9.2 of the bill relates to the Municipal Land Use Committee, the composition of the committee. I think maybe I just refer project it on the wall. Sorry. Clause 9.2 relates to the composition of the Municipal Land Use Committee. I think this question relates to the question of technical advisors. I think it's more about a suggestion about how we drafted that. It has since come to my attention that there is another clause in the bill which actually deals with technical advisors, and we're still going to refine this further. It's most certainly likely that we will be removing this proposal because clause 62 deals with it. It crept in at some point. The other comment was on term of office. The chair was of the opinion that whilst we may want to be flexible, while we may want to listen to the submission, the reality is that there may be need, or it suggested felt that there may be need to retain the question of 3 years, the term of office as it was in the original version of the bill. Actually, I will be guided by yourselves. We're just responding to submission.
So I think it didn't say that it must be retained as it is, as it were original 3 terms. But the question of the specification, that it needs really to clear that. As I indicated, that sometimes inconsistent with other legislation, in terms of the committees or commissions or every quality, you find that they are prescribed in terms of the time, term of office and all those things. I think that he was not referring in terms of that particular issue.
We also advise in relation to clause 15 that
your mic, please.
We were advised in relation to clause 15 that there is a piece of legislation in Parliament which speaks to the question of code of conduct for government employees, which will now include municipal employees, and that we should advise, we should consider the impact of that bill on this bill. Chair, we certainly must do that, and we thought we haven't looked at it as was advised in the past. I was taking note of that, and we'll do that.
On the question of the circulation of the draft, of the draft, our understanding is that this bill that was published is the version that we would be discussing with those interested parties. This draft is actually the draft that we are presenting to you after the discussion yesterday. However, you can relate that on Friday we have agreed that we are meeting with SALDA, and we will draw their attention that we are discussing some of these issues. We may not feel free to circulate this because it is your draft and not our draft at the moment. So we will tread carefully about that one. But be satisfied that we will be meeting with SALDA on Friday to have a discussion with them.
Thank you. Chair, you advised us to think carefully about the wording proposed in the new sub 2, 3, 4, and 5 of clause 73 of the bill. We're saying that there is indeed good grounds to propose that we deal with formalization of informal settlements and expedited procedures and the likes. So we can improve on the present formulation, but here I can confirm that the present regulatory framework is principally governed by the Less Formal Township Establishment Act and the DFA. There are pieces of legislation here and there. What we have proposed is a simplified version of what you have here in those two pieces of legislation, and that we have extended it to look at the reality of the problem on the basis of informed commentary that is in our possession. Chair, there was another comment on technical advisors, whether they are consultants. In the nature of land use application, there are different subjects that comes in. If we take an example of malls, for instance, there is anecdotal evidence that a town like Pretoria, or is it a city like Pretoria, has too many malls. If an application for a development of a new mall is being considered, apart from those sitting on the committee, there may be need to bring in experts or technical advisors to advise on a particular angle that will address an issue raised before a committee. There may be implications for the environment that land use committee members wish to be addressed on. But engineering is one other instance. So there are many instances where there is need to bring in expert opinion to assist a land use regulator in reaching a decision. Not necessarily as a member, or it's usually ad hoc, one-off circumstance. It may be need to bring in an expert that is not within that domain. But the reality is that in land use applications, they in practice do use technical people or technical advisors to reaching a decision on what they do. But these are not your typical consultants in the sense of those who sit in and do what we are employed to do that we're not doing sometimes. But these are just ones of advisors and not consultants on the power and prison.
I just wanted to add on this one, Chair, that these technical advisors, as Sunday says, they will be asked to come in as and when they are required on a specific subject. If they were to be paid for that service, because perhaps they were required to do a specific subject, then it would mean that they would have to be paid in terms of in line with the treasury regulations. But it is not intended that their participation there would be on the basis of consultants, but more to advise on specific issues that would be that the committee would need technical advice on. It could be a legal matter, it could be an engineering matter based on the development of that land district.
Chairperson, the clause also envisages that such a technical advisor could in fact be a municipal employee, not necessarily an outsider at all. Especially in the bigger metropoles, the bigger municipalities, they are more likely to be a municipal employee. If you look at the subclause 3, which relates to the remuneration, it refers to remuneration of such an advisor who is not an employee. So there are two categories here that we're talking about.
Chairperson, I was actually wanting clarity on this issue. The DG touched an issue of an example of a mall, whereby at the present moment you find that there is a vast land where people will plough, and now because of lack of resources, maybe there's no water, there's no resources to help them to plough. Maybe it was a scheme before. Now people from outside, they come, they like this open space, they want to build a mall. And at the present moment, because we don't have these committees in place, what they do is they go to the subject and they go and speak to the chief. And the chief says, all right, you can understand it because it's not just
the princess.
Because I also support them, but sometimes they make mistakes. And they say, no, you've got to pay something to get that land. And those people will be so insidious, they pay once off, and they take that back piece of land. And that money doesn't come to to the owners of those nothing, those same people. And we don't know how much pay. I just want to know whether this committee is going to be dealing with those municipalities. Because they worry the people so much, and they are scared to go and question the authorities. Because we are the subject, we can't question.
Can I add on what Mam Lydia is saying? In my constituency, there's an area that has got the clay to make bricks. Now, the very same thing that she's talking about happened. They happened to go to the chief, and they only paid 100,000 rand for that piece of land. The mayor didn't know. The council didn't know. But immediately when the matter reached the constituency office, we were able to block it. Now, my question would be, can there be some powers that is given to the mayors and maybe somebody to look into those issues, because really, because of money, you are going to lose a lot of valuable land. 100,000 rand for a place that has got a brick making clay that can last for about 25 years. It's a waste of that land. Instead of giving that land to the people, forming a company, making bricks themselves, bake them, sell them, they would have created a lot of opportunities rather than selling it to somebody. That somebody was from France. So the money had to be reversed. And it's bitter as I'm talking to you now. We might be facing some charges at the Royal Cross.
Chair, this is precisely why I think the questions are underlining the importance and the need for this legislation. Because if you look at your provisions, the land use schemes, clause 50, 51, 52, 53, they are actually highlighting that the way you get the land use scheme to be approved is a particular process. In the land use scheme, you
got 15.
Yeah, 50.
Yes.
Yeah, 50. It talks about the procedure to adopt the land use scheme, the alignment of the land use scheme. In other words, it talks about those land uses, and the 52 talks about the publication. In other words, this is what we are going to do about this land. So you need to go. You can't have a deal in the private here. It must be publicized, and then that's why we talked about the public participation in this process of the adoption of that land use scheme. And it actually outlines, if you look at 53, the contents of that land use scheme, it outlines exactly what will be done on that land, and there's a particular process to be followed when you are going to approve that land use scheme. So to me, that should be able to cover some of the concerns that you are raising. The use of that land, how that land is going to be used, how it is to be approved, the procedure to be followed, and it's not only one participant. It can be the mayor or councillor in his own person as the councillor, but it must be done in a process which is going to be approved by the land use committee. So to me, it would cover those concerns.
In addition to what the teacher said, quite critically, the land use scheme plays your mic, okay? Sorry.
The land use scheme plays a very critical role in recognition of rights to land. And the problem that we've had also is symptomatic of a scenario where most of the land do not have land use schemes. But in addition to the land use scheme that DJ has alluded to, if we look at clause 5 of the bill, sub 2, that's item Roman 4, we had suggested earlier, and we hope by regulations we should be able to do that. But when we said mechanism for identifying strategically located land or under utilized land and for providing access to and the use of such land, what we envisage is that when a municipality does SDS, and then before you even get to land use scheme, that between that interface, between your SDS and the land use scheme, there should be a determination by the municipality itself in a very open manner that what are the best uses to which this land may be made of. And if that has been an open issue, it will be more difficult if there's a public document which says the land around this corner, it is up to ownership, suitability index, geotechnical condition, and all those things. And in that way, maybe it's more difficult for a leader to conclude a deal that is not in the interest of his or her people. I thank you. But may I continue with your Yeah. Thanks. Regarding there was a question around municipal determination of the question of land use schemes, where there is a redetermination of municipal boundaries by the municipal demarcation board, and the possibility of overlap with between those schemes. What happens at the moment where we had some where there are some municipalities which goes beyond a number of previous councils, is that within a geographic area of a municipality, you may have different schemes applicable, because within Johannesburg Metro, for instance, you will see that there was a particular municipality, there was an old council somewhere, there was another council, now forming one. So that possibility exists. But what we are trying to say here is that if there is demarcation that the land of this municipality goes from here to here, and there's a redemarcation which says municipality B will now extend to this point. One is saying that there must be an alignment at some point to go. Which section is that? It's page 19. There must be an alignment which ensures that land use scheme goes together with the demarcation done by the demarcation board to reduce the possible clause 49 to be in line with the changes imposed by such a redetermination of the municipal boundary in terms of the Municipal Demarcation Act. The then chair also referred to clause 39 of the bill, which the question was asked whether the submission, the public submission, calling for decisions in this respect to be made in consultation with the Department of Agriculture. What the view of the department is. Chair, we looked at this fact, and we believe that in the determination, in that process leading up to a land use scheme, the input of different sectors, which would have informed the IDP, would certainly have led to the development of a land use scheme, which would be consistent with national policies, national programs, including agricultural programs. We believe that at the determination of a land use scheme, the views of the Department of Agriculture will have been heard. So we do not particularly consider that there is need to refer to the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act or any other agricultural legislation in clause 39 or 55 of the bill. We do, however, believe that if it is already taken care of at the level of development of a land use scheme, when an application is being considered, we've already proposed that clause 44 of the bill be amended to ensure that due cognizance is placed on the need for sustainable utilization of agricultural land. So that's our proposal in that respect. There are also some comments whether clause 78 of the bill, 78.4 particularly, which is more about this interface between municipality and provinces, whether we shouldn't use the word may as opposed to the use of the word must, which is currently used in section 78.4. Chair, we can get advice from the civil advisors, but we do not believe that the use of this word places more than what may will even do. Because as it is couched at the moment, 78.4 simply puts the duty on the municipality. It's a responsibility, actually, to say, when you cannot do this, when you yourself know that you cannot do this, and if you read 78.4 together with clause 19 of the bill, Clause 19 of the bill already enjoins the municipality to say, if you think you do not have the capacity, why don't you seek an agreement with your neighboring municipality? They will have agreed to do it together. If you also read it with Chapter 2 of the bill, which talks to intergovernmental support, one then would have imagined that, with respect to be a very irresponsible municipality that allows itself to get to this point where it does not have the capacity. Because on one hand, they say national should give capacity. Provinces should do capacity and support. Then you are saying that if you don't get the capacity from the province at the national level, agree with your neighbor. Now we're saying that if all these things fail, please refer it to another body. And that's what we're saying. We do not believe that May or March would do so much violence to the intention in this respect. Cheche, I wonder, but I think from my notes I might have covered what I had.
Yeah. Just to say, we would be interacting with the state advisor on some of these proposals that we've made, to refine this in the language, like in the last proposal of the other land use laws, how we deal with them. So I think that's a bit common.
I wonder if Afi has just cleaned up a little bit and also try to make sure that things that are not done have been done, that can circulate to members through the committee.
That will do, Chair.
Because I'm sure my friend who is not here, he insisted on this issue and cried. Robert cried so that you see, we are part of this process. So that on Tuesday, they will have gone through and consult the agri-SA, of course, because I know they're going to consult them. So that the agri-SA advise them accordingly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm told that the lunch is served at no cost.
It's 10%. Just for interest sake. There are so many things that are at stake. We are discussing here normality. Again, this is something that is happening. I'm from Mpumalanga, she's from Limpopo. After the redemarcation, there's an area of Mute that was in Mpumalanga. That has gone to Limpopo. Now there's this big dam. It's in Mpumalanga. It's already in Limpopo now. It was in Mpumalanga before. Now the Limpopo guys are enjoying the irrigation scheme from that dam. The Mpumalanga guys are no longer. How do we deal with all this? Because really, and the guys that are in Mpumalanga, most of them are the emerging farmers. There's this scheme called the Loskop Valley Irrigation Scheme that was formed long ago. And in order for me to join that scheme, I must start paying the levy from when that scheme was started. I don't know. There are many things that it's tough. I don't know. How do you deal with these issues? I don't know. It's water affairs. Yes, I understand. It's water affairs. But now we're dealing with land issues, demarcation, and all those things.
No. They can't admit that to say it's water affairs. Because we've got what's called
cluster
within government, where clusters they usually meet and discuss issues that are overlapping within the economic cluster. They are part of the economic cluster, which I don't think, that's why I'm saying they cannot dismiss it at all. They are part of that economic cluster, which they're supposed to interact within the functionaries when they meet. But just that they don't want to do that. But anyway.
We will take the particular details, because I would like to find out what is which departments are interacting with this. The Department of Agriculture, the Department of Water Affairs, the wireless local government, because there have been issues where some of the communities have been transferred from one province to the other. In most of those cases, we find that the services, I know that in one case in Sisonge, they said the budget of Sisonge was sitting in the Eastern Cape, but the people were in KZN, and KZN had no budget because the budget was sitting in the Eastern Cape, and it was a problem. So I wouldn't be able to respond to this until we've got the facts. Yeah.
But those are some of the issues that make make the failure of our land redistribution and land restitution. We fail because we don't have the resources.
In fact, if Mantuli were listening when I was asking him that question yesterday, he said they agreed that. Today he's talking contrary to what he said yesterday. Anyway, let's see.
Chairperson, we weren't consulted on the delimitation. That's the problem.
you. Anyway, the committee stand again.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what you say, you lose.
You're in the loose
No, you see.
These people have been struggling for too long. Don't take chances now.
You see, these things are managed by Water Use Association. So it's either a member or you are not.
No. But you have a concern that you are giving somebody a piece of land, and that somebody must be able to irrigate. And there's water that can be used. So it means you must stand up and say something to that water use somebody.
No, we are.